Well, it's good to have you with us once again.
Good to be back, David.
For a while now, about this time, you have been suggesting a word of the year.
That's correct.
Last year, it was Y2K. Mm-hmm. We could argue whether that's a word or not. Is there a word, now this, I guess this would be the
why
word
not,
of the year for,
why not
why
2K?
Not 2K? why?
Why?
Why 2K? I don't know. So this would be the word for 2000, I guess.
Wait, right.
Is there a word for 2000?
Unfortunately, there is.
And I would bet money that I know what it is.
Yeah, I didn't even make a pronouncement because everybody else was making the pronouncement. And boy, there was no point in coming up with an alternative to Chad.
I would have been willing to bet money that's what it was.
It's an amazing word because apparently it goes back to the 1940s at least. It's a word used by people in the punch card industry initially, so far as we can determine. Mm-hmm. And it was initially, again, so far as we can tell by looking at early uses of it, what we call a mass noun. In other words, it didn't have a separate plural form. It didn't refer to a single piece of Chad, but Chad, as in there's a box full of Chad under the punch card reader. Time to empty the Chad. So we have no idea what it means in terms of its etymology. I mean, we know what it means. It refers to the little piece of cardboard that is punched out of the IBM punch cards. And it may go back earlier to telegraph usage and punch tape. We're not exactly sure. It has, as far as we know, it was not an acronym. I mean, a number of proposals have been fielded, and they're all bogus as far as we can tell. You know, interesting, but no proof of its origin.
You would think it would be easier to track down than some other words if we think that it's relatively recent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
mm-hmm.
doesn't go back to Chaucer
right.
or anything
go
like
back,
that.
Well, there was a medieval Chad, but it had nothing. And then there was a Saint Chad.
Was there Saint the there patron saint, saint of
patron saint of waste paper? I don't know.
Well, at any rate, I thought for sure that would
pilgrims on the way to Canterbury made a side trip.
The Chad's
to
tale
visit
was
the
there.
Shrine of Saint Chad uh-huh. and prayed for intercession if they had, you know, paper cuts or something. I don't know.
Well, it makes a pretty good story.
It's a great story.
Right. We have some callers. We had somebody on
the
car
lost
phone.
Somebody.
We lost them. Both
because
callers.
Chad is so interesting now. You know, it's like people never heard of it.
Let's go to Vincennes, Indiana, line number 4. Hello. Is there a caller there? Line number 4? Don't know. Okay. No. Maybe they gave up too. I'm sorry if we made them wait too long.
My fault.
Fault. No, believe me, it's my show. I'll accept full responsibility.
It's your fault, David. You talk too much.
There are people who think so. Believe me, there are. Well, if you have questions for Dennis, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. So I find this very curious that no one really knows where this, not only don't know where it came from, but don't even know what it means or why that as opposed to some other four-letter.
Exactly. And it's not such an unusual situation that we just don't know where something came from. Just because it's seems to be fairly recent coinage, again, because it originated as a technical term in the punch card industry, nobody really paid much attention to recording what it meant or where it came from or who invented it, or was it some guy named Chad who invented it, and, you know, things like that.
We're going to try again here to talk with our caller in Vincennes on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Great.
Okay. I have a question regarding language. I don't know if this is part of your subject matter, but it's regarding foreign language. I've got a second grade student. My son is in second grade, and they're currently studying Spanish. Now, could you tell me what, if any, advantage there is to studying a second language at that age, if it would help as far as they're not even studying, like, English yet? And I'm wondering if there's a benefit mm-hmm. studying a second language as far as making English an easier language to learn, or if it's just a sort of a multicultural venture that they're embarking on. I'll hang up and let you discuss the values of studying a second language at that age.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Okay, well, I'm not a second language acquisition expert, but I can tell you some of the thinking on this is that children tend to be able to learn languages more easily in some regards than adults do. Something about the language acquisition mechanism works better with children. Now, maybe it's a learning mechanism altogether that does it. I mean, if you started studying computer science in your 40s, that might be harder than if you started studying it as a college student in a more conventional age group, you know, 18 to 21. So there's that. I don't know that it would help you with your English particularly. There are people who value language acquisition who feel that we should be more than monolingual in this country, in this world, and there are other people who see no use for it whatsoever. I am a language person, and so I feel like languages are intrinsically interesting. The more you know, the better, if it suits your purpose. Some people say, well, you know, the level of instruction is not going to be so terrifically high in second grade in terms of second language. You know, you're not going to wind up necessarily being a fluent speaker of Spanish, but, you know, anything's possible. And, evoking that early interest is probably a good thing.
Mm. You know, the old joke among language people, what do you call a person who only speaks one language?
In American?
That's right. That's right. And I know that
could be French, too.
Well, I'm sure that it is equally true of other places and other people. But it goes to the argument that says that here in the United States, we have a rather chauvinistic attitude that says, well, the rest of the world should speak our language. And a lot of people do. But the argument is still made that it would be a good thing for Americans to be more multilingual.
Right. And we also have a kind of paradoxical attitude toward language. We expect non-English speaking immigrants to this country and even visitors to this country to speak English, to learn English, to give up their first language if it's other than English. And then we turn around and give them a language requirement if they go to school.
That's irony for you.
Yes.
We have other callers. Dennis Barron's with us this morning. He's professor of English here at the University of Illinois. He is, as a matter of fact, the head of the Department of English.
I am the head.
I am the head. And every once in a while, he's here and we talk about language. And questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-WILO. We will go next to a caller in Urbana, line one.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'd like to know if you know the origin of the phrase, the whole nine yards, describing the whole story?
Right. It's often attributed to fabric as opposed to football. Why 9 yards of football? It's 10 yards, isn't it? It's you know, like a bolt of cloth. The whole bolt of cloth needed to make some kind of garment. But beyond that, I'm not sure.
It
means the entire thing, the gestalt, rather than a portion of it.
Right. Maybe
it's rather than a distance. Rather than a distance thing, I guess is what I'm trying to say by football. A unit of measurement.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. We'll have to have somebody who is experienced in dressmaking maybe tell us if nine yards is a significant amount of material.
That's a lot of material, 9 yards.
Well, it seems to me. Okay. Well.
And I might be wrong about this it seems to me that that's the consensus opinion on that particular phrase.
All right. Very good. To next, Mattoon. Line number two. Hello.
Hello. I hope you can help me with this. This has been driving me crazy for the past 4 years. I'm originally from Michigan, and I don't know whether this is a regional thing or not, but down here in Mattoon, I've noticed that a lot of people use, I guess it's called the present progressive test, like if you are wanting or I am wanting to go here. I have never heard that used in 50 years of living until I moved down here.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I want to do this. But if you are wanting to go to the store, it just, it sounds to me that it is poor grammar, but is it just that I am not used to it, or is it a regional thing, or is it bad grammar, or what? It is used a lot. If you are wanting to graduate, if you are wanting to go to the doctor, if you are wanting to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my guess is that it is fairly regional. I agree that I have not heard it as much in other parts of the country, and it may be also partly class-related. As well as geographical.
Mm-hmm.
And I often hear it in the interrogative, as in, was you wanting to do such and such?
Right.
I would say that it's common in central Illinois among certain groups of speakers. Is it bad grammar? Well, it's bad grammar if you think it's bad grammar, because in one sense, good and bad grammar are in the ears of the beholder. It works in certain kinds of social situations, and obviously it doesn't work for you. I don't know that it works real well for me, but it's an attitude question rather than anything else. In other words, what's acceptable in one social situation is questionable in other kinds of talk situations. And I think you'll find it more a feature of speech than writing.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. I'm certain this is the kind of thing that linguists study.
Love it.
Is
yes.
it possible to find a reason that people would use a construction like that, or would
it's because they're sick and tired of saying Chad.
Leave him out of this. He'll be here next week and can defend himself. You know why? I mean, why would you? Or is it just there really is no reason? We just say, well,
what is the reason? There's not, you know, it's like an actor saying, "What's my motivation?" I'm not sure that there's a clear motivation. Nonetheless, it fits a certain pre-existing grammatical pattern, and it's not it's not out of the blue. It's taking something that is common enough in other situations, that present progressive, the ing form of the verb, if you will, the ing form, and using it in a new and different and previously unthought of way, and enough people do it that it becomes a custom. Becomes a linguistic feature. So that's the reason. I mean, you take something, I mean, people are always inventing new ways, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, to deal with English structure. We're constantly being creative with it. Sometimes something catches on. Sometimes it's, most innovations like that may have originally been errors. That became somebody trying to say one thing and wound up saying another by mistake, performance errors. We garble our words often enough when we speak. So somehow it caught on. I mean, some inventions are quite conscious, too. This probably was not one of them.
Hmm. All right. We'll continue. Next is Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm wondering what the word is on the subjunctive mood. Is that obsolescent, or is it officially obsolete? Do they even teach it anymore?
Well, an interesting question and a common one. People have been declaring the subjunctive to be dead for several hundred years now, yet it seems to persist.
Well, it's so useful.
It's useful, yes, and it still persists. People don't maybe use it quite as much in certain kinds of structures as they used to, but it's always there, and there's no indication that it's going to disappear. So obsolescent in the sense that it is seems to be perpetually dying but never dead.
It's not part of the official curriculum in English classes then, or?
Well, there is no official curriculum. We don't have a state national curriculum. I'm not sure whether the subjunctive is part of the Illinois State Language Arts curriculum or not. I think the curriculum is phrased a little bit more broadly. If you were to look in a grammar book in a school, you would probably find a lesson on the subjunctive. If you were to watch a grammar class over the course of a year, you might not find that lesson being taught. I don't know.
How about the adverb?
The adverb? How about the adverb?
Well, it seems to be missing from commercials and...
Give me an example. Those an adverbial commercials.
Of course, it vanishes from my mind.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that happens to me all the time, too. Do you feel that there's a... Are you suggesting that people are using the adjective form rather than the adverbial form?
Yeah, right, the adverb.
Okay, like go slow.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in an expression like go slow, slow is an adverb. Slowly is an additional adverb that was formed because slow didn't feel adverbial enough. But if you look at English historically, you don't have to have an ly to have an adverb.
Uh-huh.
Okay. There's form in language and there's function, and sometimes you can have the adverbial function without the adverbial form.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's continue. We'll go to, line one next. That's Champagne. Hello?
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get back to you on the 9 yards, the whole 9 yards.
Yeah.
The way
somebody with a book.
The way I had seen that described was it was relating to the length of a strand of machine gun bullets during World War I especially.
Mm-hmm.
But they came in these long bands, if you will, or whatever, with the bullets attached in there. One person fired the weapon, the other person fed the belt. And
mm-hmm.
if you were going to shoot the whole thing, you were shooting the whole 9 yards.
Right. And there are lots of explanations like that. I think probably that the phrase is older than the machine gun, however.
Well, that was just...
So, that shoots a hole in that argument, doesn't it?
No argument, just an alternative. That's
yeah, yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much. Yeah.
All right.
You get these very specific, in etymology, these very specific incidents like you know, the machine gun ammunition belt, and they sound so interesting and convincing, and yeah, of course, it's got to be that, and then it turns out that, oops, it's a fortunate coincidence rather than the actual explanation. Of course, I'm probably wrong, probably isn't older than the machine gun, but I think it is.
All right, next caller, Urbana, line number two, hello.
Yeah, I heard a different explanation of those whole 9 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They said it had to do with the amount of cement in a cement truck.
Mm-hmm.
That's 9 cubic yards.
I think it comes before cement trucks, too.
Yeah, probably. I don't know if I heard it somewhere, but the thought popped in my head when you were talking about CAD.
Yeah, well, you're looking at, yards of cement, yards of fabric, yards in football, yards,
Why would it be 9?
Right, why 9?
Well, and the volume of a cement mill seems to be exactly 9 cubic yards, at least the average one.
Uh-huh.
So, but aside from that, about Chad.
Yes.
I thought it might have something to do with chaff.
That's been suggested, yes, but the connection between chaff...
I heard that somewhere, too, but the thought popped in my head when you were talking about it.
Right,
so
right.
I explain that it's just a singular and that it doesn't have... a plural form.
Mm-hmm. Wheat and chaff.
And that is light, fluffy stuff that you throw away.
But then the question is, why didn't they just call it chaff?
Well, because chaff is already something else.
Chaff is something else, so let's invent a word that sounds like chaff but isn't chaff. So why didn't we invent chat or chant or, well, it's a possibility. It certainly is. There's a realm of possibilities. We could have a contest. People could, enter the most convincing explanation for Chad. I think had something to do with machine guns. Back in the post-Civil War era, there was a fellow who made machine gun ammunition belts named Chad. actual name was.
I thought it was the box that held the Chad held 9 yards worth of Chad.
9 yards worth of Chad.
Those belts were 9 yards long, right?
That's right.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, thanks for the call.
And,
appreciate
you know, the cement overcoat.
Uh-huh. Let's go on to a car phone, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a comment on the question from the lady from Mattoon about construction. Are you wanting?
Yes.
Actually, I'm from Mattoon also, but I was brought up on the edge of Appalachia.
Ah.
And I happen to know that a lot of people from this area, particularly in Cumberland County and parts of Coles County, migrated from Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
Its construction I heard a lot when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that that is more of a regional thing that sort of migrated with the people from the south.
That's
That's my guess. That's all it is. I'm not a linguist.
That's very very likely that spread.
A lot of other southernisms in some of the local speech that I find interesting, but it's probably not grammatically correct, but I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
thank you.
For the call. We are already close to the midpoint of the hour. Our guest is Dennis Barron. He's professor of English at University of Illinois, and every once in a while stops by here, and we talk about language and grammar, how things change, give people the opportunity to complain if they like. Any and all is welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Fosland. Here, line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
There's been something bothering me for several years, and that's been the use of the word got in connection with have and has.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if your guest could comment on whether we're possibly trying to substitute got for and maybe drop have and has. But to me, it seems superfluous to place got in connections such as we have got to go to the store or the country has got to begin such and such.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it seems kind of sloppy.
Okay, so superfluous and sloppy. Sounds good to me.
Is it?
Let's do away with all synonyms and intensifiers while we're at it, and we can reduce the 475,000 words in the English vocabulary to 400 or 800. There was an attempt to do that in the 1930s. It was called Basic English, and the philosopher C.K. Ogden was one of the folks behind that. On the argument that there are too many words and people are using one word when another word would do just fine. How are you going to stop them from doing it is the problem. And even if you don't like it, sometimes you got to accept it.
In grammar history, does this sort of usage lead to the dropping of one word or the other and the substitution of got?
Right, right. Sometimes, but, one word sometimes will replace another word. It doesn't look like have is a particularly weak future. However, because it is one of the most basic words in the English language, it's if you look at the frequency of use of a word like have, you'll see that it pops up all over the place, and it's not going to go away soon. So I guess I'm saying that you don't have to like it, but you don't have to worry too much about the got for have thing, because have is not an endangered species. Chad, however, will disappear quite soon, my guess is, back into its former comfortable oblivion. And by this time next year, it will be a distant memory.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Well, here is another case where if you say something like we have got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, here people feel the need to think it's
an intensifier.
It's really important.
Yeah,
and so
stresses the obligation, and that's probably how it gets worked into this thing. And then in speech, you see, because have tends not to be stressed, it gets dropped. So if we have got to becomes we've got, we got to, we gotta. And then people say, oh, have is disappearing. But in fact, it's not disappearing. It's just sort of cloaked in a Star Trek type of shield that makes it invisible. It's a cloaking device.
Uh-huh. Got Chad? That's
fine. There we go.
I'm going to work on that one for a while. So
guy's spitting bits of paper out of his mouth.
So no one says must anymore. No one says we must do
Sure they do.
They do?
But people don't say what my grandma used to say all the time, ya dasn't.
She did say you dasn't
do that.
Was she in also Hadassah?
No. It's a variant of dare. You dare not. You dasn't do it.
All right.
You might still hear it around a little bit, but it's then there's an example of something that is, you know, sort of probably on the way out.
All right. We dasn't make these people wait any longer. Let's go to Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi. Speaking of Star Trek and ships and all, I just thought I'd throw in that the expression the whole nine yards is actually a nautical term, and it comes from the days of tall ships where you had three masts, and then off of each mast there'd be 3 yards. So to say that there were the whole nine yards meant.
So there was the sail. The sail.
The whole thing. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, so that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
It's certainly older than the machine gun. I suppose it's a good candidate for this. But I think that the verdict is not decisive on something like the whole nine yards. It's another one that is, you should pardon the expression, shrouded in the mysteries of the past.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, thanks, friend. We'll run that one up the... Oh, never mind. I think, Rockford next, line number four.
Yes. Had a comment about the... term the whole nine yards. That was used very much by the aviators in World War One to explain that they've shot up their entire nine-yard long belt of machine gun ammunition.
There's another vote for the
nautical books, and I've never heard the whole nine yards referred to the yard arms on a sailing ship. Although it might have had nine, and maybe it did, but it was never very widely known, very widely used that way to my knowledge, but it was extremely widely used in World War One by the aviators referring to their machine gun belts being used up.
Mm-hmm.
I shot up the whole nine yards because that was the length of the belt. And I'd also like to comment on some of these words like got you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to see the word got being used in place of have.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another one is a slang word, whatever. Another one is you say a statement, if somebody agrees with you, they say, well, exactly. And I say, well, no, not really, only approximately is usually my answer on that.
Don't have a lot of conversations with an attitude like that. It tends to drive people away.
Well, let them. And another one is, where is it at?
Yeah.
My English teacher in sixth grade used to say, if somebody'd say, where's it at? She'd say, sitting on top of the at.
Mm-hmm. There's a classic joke, which we cannot tell on a family radio station like this, about ending sentences with prepositions. But.
Yeah. Anyway, so I wanted to make those comments, and I think somebody, I'll do some research on that nautical term. Maybe it was used, but I've read a lot of seafaring books and never heard it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call. Another vote for the machine gun explanation.
The machine gun.
Okay. We'll have to see if we can track this down. We'll give Dennis an assignment.
Right. Maybe Gene Roddenberry invented it in Star Trek. You know, it's part of his Star Trek vocabulary, and then everybody else is just imagining that they heard it 100 years ago or 50 years ago in the war and whatever.
All right. Well, we'll go on to the campus here in line number one. Hello.
Did you say line one?
Yes.
That's me. Good morning. Yeah. I tuned in the middle of Chad.
Yes.
And I'm sitting in front of the computer, so I pulled up the old trusted Oxford English Dictionary.
Yes.
And there's a 1959.
59, reference. Yes. But Webster's takes it back about 10 years or more.
Yeah. And there's even an adjective,
mm-hmm.
Chadless.
Mm-hmm. Strange. Yes, because Chadless then was an advantage. If you could have a Chadless punch card.
Right, sure.
Ah.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
enjoy
thanks.
The program.
Very good. Other questions, comments, welcome. Dennis Barron is here, and we're talking about language. If you have questions, you can call us 333-WILL or 9455, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I'm sorry if no one has come forward claiming to have invented that term because it's gotten so much attention.
Right.
No one has has said, I'm the guy who first decided to call this
channel. Right. We know who named the computer mouse the mouse. You know, we know who coined certain kinds of words, but others we don't. You know, we know where quark comes from, for example. But many of these sorts of curiosities, we don't know who the wag was, or the inventor, or the wit who said, "Hey, let's call a chad."
So, did the guy who invented the mouse? Was it because it sort of looked like a mouse? Did he claim that it was because it was this sort of little thing and it had this thing that looked like a tail on it?
Scurried around the desktop, sort of shape, and I forget the exact... The question then arose later on what the plural of computer mouse was. Should it be mice or should it be mouses? And I remember, I forget the inventor's name, but I remember Wired magazine went back and asked him.
And he said,
"Well, I never thought about that."
He said, "I don't care.
Who cares?
I don't care. I don't get any money out of it. Call it whatever you want." All right, let's go on to line number two, and that would be Champagne. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Always such fun when Dennis Barron comes.
Well, I'd like to think
Most interesting things. I wanted to ask, I heard someone this weekend use a word that I had not heard since my mother and my grandmother used it.
Mm.
And this is in reference to really delicious food, and the term is, it's larrapin good.
Hmm, larrapin,
Is that a common Southern expression, or?
I don't know how common it is.
I haven't heard it in years.
Right, it's probably marked.
Oh, it was larrapin good, and I thought, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly regional, probably age-related. In other words, as old-fashioned and old-timey.
Do you have any idea how it got, where is it from?
I don't know. I know I've heard it, and, you know, it means a whole lot of, you know, very, extremely larrapin good.
Okay. Well, I just wondered if I was the only one who'd ever heard that, because, like I said, it's been years.
Right.
And just one other quick observation. I'm getting so irritated with businesses who offer a free gift.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't gift, by definition, free?
Well, then there is the no such thing as a free gift.
True, I suppose. Anyway, just a comment about larrapin.
Mm-hmm.
Good program. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
The gifts are free as long as shipping and handling.
That's right. Well, it's a free gift as long as you buy something else.
Right. Well, it's a free country. You can say a free gift or not.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's go to line number three, and the person is in Broadlands right here, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I missed some of the middle of the program here, so I don't know if anybody called in about the 9 yards.
We've had a few. What's your take on the 9 yards?
My understanding is it's a dump truck. It's 9 cubic yards, the standard dump truck.
Well, that's close to Dennis's. He said someone had said that it was the amount of cement that truck would hold.
My guess is that you have a popular expression like the whole 9 yards, and then people who start making things tailor what they make to the expression, so that the reason that the machine gun belts were made 9 yards long, if in fact they really were, was because they wanted to fit that expression.
The reason guys were sitting around in the armory.
Yeah, you've heard about the metric, you know, everything conforms to metric or feet, pound, and ounces. Well, that's the nine. That's my explanation of the 9 yards. So that, you know, let's build something so that it's 9 yards is a standard now, right?
So it's cause,
right? Now I'm just making this up, obviously.
Like everything else.
Like everything else I say.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
That's what expertise is, right? It's the ability to bake something up to fit.
And make it sound very convincing.
Make it sound convincing.
And, you know, do that on the spot. Now,
do that on the spot and do that on the radio.
That's right. That's the kind of thing that gets you, you know, a cabinet position or something.
That's exactly right.
All right.
You know?
The whole 9 yards. They were sitting around. The guys said, "Now, how big could we make the cement mixer?"
Well, I think it's Chad that got people. Chad got people. The cabinet positions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. All right.
Well, I'm surprised no one has asked about the different pronunciations of Florida or Florida.
It hadn't even occurred to me.
No one has mentioned this in the whole.
How do the Floridians say that?
Well, I think the Floridians use an East Coast pronunciation, which would be more Florida.
Wow.
Which is the pronunciation I use and get teased about relentlessly.
By everyone? By or just people from there? Or?
Everyone in my family.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, let's continue here. We have about 10 minutes left. We'll see if we can count it. Everyone, next we have another person on a car phone, line number 4. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Making it up as you go along, I've heard the term larruping good for years myself, has to do, I think, with the hound dog and the sound he makes when he cleans something out of his bowl.
Uh-huh.
He larrups it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's an onomatopoetic
yes.
term. I would look it up in the Dictionary of American Regional English, because there you will find some examples of how it's used and possibly some suggestion of whether it is sort of an imitation of a slurping sound.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Well, that's kind of what occurred to me too. Mm-hmm. That seems to make sense, but of course, as we pointed out so many times, the things that seems to we like explanations of origins because they seem to make sense or they make good stories. Mm. That doesn't necessarily mean they're true, but...
Right. Probably turns out that there was an old verb to larrup, or there was this guy named Larrup.
Chad Larrup. I went to high school with him.
And he got really enthusiastic about certain kinds of foods.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. We're explaining all kinds of stuff today. Amazing what you can learn when you listen to the show. We'll go to Champagne. Line number 1. Hello.
Oh, good morning, Dennis. I'm interested in the use of the word grow as a transitive verb, like we're going to grow the business.
Yes.
This isn't right, is it?
Well, it isn't right. Of course it's right if people are using it and enough people pick it up. It becomes right. The turning of verbs into transitives is not such an unusual thing. With the history of the language, but you're right that grow is one that in certain kinds of contexts you hear administrators and business people using that kind of language. We want to grow the faculty, we want to grow the business.
Yeah, it just sounds really weird to me.
Well, I mean, we grow plants, we grow flowers. I mean, it's a simple jump from that sort of thing to using it in less familiar contexts, where grow is more of a metaphor than a literal. I mean, growing plants, of course, they do get bigger. Growing animals. We don't say yet, but let's grow a child.
Not yet,
but, you know, leave that up to the genetic engineers.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Is there any indication that over time that people are tending to use fewer syllables to express the same thoughts? Is language becoming more compact or more streamlined? What the kinds of things to which listeners object is that is it a move towards being more economical in speech?
Huh.
Thank you very much.
There's your answer right there. Language goes in two directions. There's a simplification direction, if you will, call it simplification, reduction of syllables, ease of articulation of sounds, streamlining. Of course, if it were to continue in that direction, in no time at all, we'd wind up with
And we couldn't have
Yeah,
that.
Right. Which would express everything we need to express. Okay, so there is a centrifugal as well as centripetal force.
That's a good
There's
word.
A complexifying force that operates as well as a simplifying force. So it goes in both directions.
And these are happening simultaneously and at the same time?
Both.
Thank you. We have other callers.
Oh.
Line 2 is next in Urbana. Hello. Line 2. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
My current pet peeve is the what I see in print and here on newscasts is everybody doesn't something or other.
Yes.
Like wash their hands after they go to the bathroom, let's say. Meaning not everyone washes their hands, or some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like it means absolutely everybody doesn't do something. I'm
right.
sure that's not what they mean.
It means they mean not everybody does it, but yeah.
It seems to be fairly new, like within the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get tired of the old ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't give them up. We don't give them up altogether.
Yeah. I really enjoy your attitude about language.
Well, I'm glad somebody does, because it's a living, but it's a meager one. You know, I have plenty of dislikes, too. But, I mean, the thing is this. You don't like something that somebody says or that a lot of people say, but how do you stop them from doing it? I once suggested to a caller that the only way he was really exercised about some language problem, pet peeve that he had, and kept insisting that there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way to stop people from doing this. I didn't even remember what the thing was, and I said, the only thing I could think of is putting a plastic bag over their heads, and you know, get them to stop. We can't legislate this very, you know, parents try to correct their children's language, teachers try to correct their students' language, we try to correct the misconceptions and misusages of our friends, our colleagues, our parents. They don't listen.
Well, but it's still interesting to talk about how.
Exactly. Exactly.
Without putting people down.
Exactly. That's what you got to do.
But I've also been thinking about the earlier caller who was concerned about his child in second grade Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And some additional thoughts beyond what you said.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that if we're going to be a so-called superpower, that we ought to have some concept of other languages. We need people we need to find the people who are language, who can acquire languages and who are interested in other cultures so that we're more cognizant of different societies. And it always intrigues me with the languages that I've dabbled in, and I've only just dabbled in some, is the things that you find out about a culture by the way that they use language.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For instance, in Nepali, there's no word for thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting concept. Why isn't there a word for thank you? Well, you're just expected to do what you're supposed to do. You know, so there's no reason to thank you if you're doing what's expected of you anyway. Just different worldviews, and I think that those are interesting, and it points out that we don't have a monopoly on the one way to do things. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind and puts a little bit of perspective on our self-centeredness. Thanks.
Okay, well, you're absolutely right, and I'm not going to thank you for that comment, but
because well, I will,
there's
because
no need to. But
that's the way
nonetheless,
I was raised.
Nonetheless, the absence of the thank you idiom doesn't mean that people aren't grateful in the culture either.
Hmm.
Doesn't mean they don't appreciate.
All right. Let's go back to Champagne, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
According to Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, chit-chat means small talk.
Mm-hmm.
A chit is a short letter or note, a signed voucher, or a small debt.
Yes.
I would much rather say chad than chit. Wouldn't you?
I have no idea what I would rather say. Those have been proposed. Chit especially has been proposed as a source for chad, but there is simply no convincing connection that you can make between
the
two.
Is Chad in the dictionary?
Pardon?
Is Chad, C-H-A-D, in the dictionary?
It is in some dictionaries. It is in Webster's Collegiate, and it is in the Oxford English.
And what is the definition in Webster's Collegiate?
The definition in both is a little piece of punched paper, and it's always traced directly to punch cards and punch tape.
I see. Mm-hmm. I see.
Nothing
okay,
nothing
thank
to
you.
Do with IOUs or notes or
well, small,
chits
small talk, something
or small talk. No,
well,
not that.
A small piece of something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and thank you. And to Geneva, line number four. Hello.
Hi. In the last couple of years, I've noticed there's a lot of use of the ing form of the present verb. The worst or the best example I have is somebody once told me, I am feeling that I am needing to be leaving early. Is this a trend, or where did it start? Have you noticed this?
I am not knowing where it comes from.
Or where it is coming from?
I am not knowing where it is coming from. It is used certainly in South Asian English as well. It's a trend, yeah. Why is it a trend? Who knows?
Oh, no. Okay.
Where is it going? Who knows?
Well,
is it entering more written forms of language? I'm not noticing it there as much as in speech.
No, true. And yeah. The common use of it is I am needing.
Mm-hmm.
Doing this or to be doing that. Or I am needing you to be doing something.
Okay.
Well, I just thought perhaps there was an origin for it, because I hear it from time to time, but I haven't been able to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it is this sort of circumventional or roundabout way of saying something. I'm needing you to do this. As, you know, it's a little less direct, a little less, maybe a little more polite way of giving a person an order. I don't know. That's a possibility with that particular use, but it certainly that progressive form is increasing in use.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we will try and take one more person here in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have just one word of obfuscation or light about the 9 yards.
Mm.
It's how much you need to make a military kilt.
Now this certainly goes back before the machine gun.
It takes a in military style kilt, you just have one tiny stripe, so that to get an inch of waist, it takes about 10 inches of material.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you multiply that by 32 or 34,
mm-hmm.
you get in the neighborhood of 9 yards.
Well, there again, okay, sounds pretty good.
It sounds good.
I'm not saying that that's the thing, but it's one more little.
Thank you. Well, we'll have to continue to work on this and see if we can.
One of these dictionaries of phrase origins would probably have a bunch of those and conclude, we don't know.
And you can pick the one that you like
pick
best.
Pick the one that you like best.
Right. There we must leave it because we're at the end of the time. Thank you.
And what would the whole 9 yards be in the metric system?
Well,
because we'll have to give up
have
that
to make a
idiom,
conversion.
Right?
The whole however many centimeters.
Meters, the whole.
Well, you could work on that.
I mean, it would be 8-point-something meters, is that?
It's
somebody do the conversion for me. I don't have a calculator.
Dennis Barron, you can tell he's a professor of English.
He's not a professor of math.
Here at University of Illinois, occasionally he's with us on the show and we talk about language. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.